My name is Aram. My pronouns are he, him. I am the writer and producer of the actual play Dungeons & Dragons podcast, God's Fall.
And my name is Dylan. My pronouns are he, him. I'm a physicist from Canada.
Welcome to Kill Every Monster. This week on Kill Every Monster, we are featuring the hag.
There are a couple types of hags in Dungeons & Dragons, and we'll talk about some of them, but we're going to focus on the classic green hag. Green hags are described in the Monster Manual as wretched and hateful creatures that dwell in dying forests, lonely swamps, and misty moors, making their homes in caves. Green hags love to manipulate other creatures into doing their bidding, masking their intentions behind layers of deception. They lure victims to them by mimicking voices calling out for help, or drive unwanted visitors away by imitating the cries of fierce beasts.
We are joined by Sally Tamarkin. Sally, whose pronouns are she, her, is an editor, writer, and sensitivity reader. She's been a lifestyle journalist since 2014 and a TTRPG enthusiast since about 1988, when she discovered her older brother's advanced Dungeons & Dragons books and began to read and obsessively reread them. She has a master's of social work in community organizing and co-hosts the podcast, Oh, I Like That. You can find her online at Sally T and at sally.gay. Welcome to the show, Sally.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited. And Aram, you have so much gravitas when you read my bio. I feel so incredibly special.
That is my one talent. I can make your bio sound really good.
As a warning off the top, we're going to mention that hags are inspired by myths and stories about witches. A lot of their lore has deep roots in misogyny and anti-Semitism.
These topics are pervasive in D&D's lore of the hag, and we'll be talking about them extensively and bluntly. If that's a bit heavy for you right now, go ahead and jump ahead to the 20-minute mark. Sally, what is a hag to you?
So hags to me are kind of like the perfect villain because they all fall somewhere on the continuum of like mischievous to just incredibly evil. They're also familiar to a lot of people, I think particularly, you know, so many cultures, Western cultures in particular, have some sort of hag in their folklore, whether it's like a Hansel and Gretel situation or Baba Yaga in like Slavic folklore, or like when I was doing some research on hags, it was like every Western European culture basically has a hag.
Like you said, Baba Yaga, the proper noun hags versus like just the standard witch in the wood trope, you know, don't go out into the swamp because there's a scary old lady there. Like, everybody knows that.
I like that they're so familiar to so many people. Because, you know, as someone who is kind of a nerd in some ways, but not in others, I don't really have a lot of familiarity with what I have found to be like familiar, like tropes to other gamers. And so like, you know, a lot of times, like someone will be like, you know, like Boba Fett. And I'm like, I don't know, that has no meaning to me. Or like, you know, play them like this captain on Star Trek. And I don't know what that means. And I really like when references are like a little bit more likely to be things that more people can pick up on. You have a greater chance at a table of like calling up an image that many people are familiar with hag versus like a D&D monster that like Gary Gygax invented.
If you say lich or kobold or like those are not things that everybody necessarily has a point of reference for.
But if you say hag or werewolf or vampire, these things resonate with all of us in some way. And that does make it, and that is interesting because the only thing that really makes something a monster is if we all agree it's a monster. So this idea that we all have that this thing is a monster makes something more monstrous. And it does make it more impactful in a game when you can all be there in that moment at the same time.
Because so many hags in fairy tales have very similar, like, awful inclinations and powers. I think, you know, if you even know a little bit about, you know, again, like if you've read Hansel and Gretel, who, like, the witch in that, like, eats children, like you sort of have a sense of like just exactly kind of like how depraved hags can be, and that's scary.
A lot of descriptions of hags, as previously mentioned, have a lot of heavy roots in misogyny. It's an ugly old woman who is unwanted by society. When I have a party wander into a room and there's a hag there, they don't necessarily know something's wrong until things have gone wrong, and that's a fun monster.
One of the things that's like really interesting about the hag, as steeped in misogyny as and like normative gender roles as the hag lore, at least in 5th edition D&D, is, there's some stuff in there that is like well done. For example, hags have super duper long lifespans, like thousands of years. Hags are really old, so like they no longer give a fuck. They're not welcome in the Feywild, and they just don't care. And that's like a really funny kind of on the nose take about Western womanhood. It's like, after you get to be 40, girlfriend, don't worry, because you won't care anymore. And it's like kind of true, actually.
This is where I feel obligated to bring up the as-written lore. Hags are going to be misogynist, which is always like the crooked nose, the unfair deals, all that stuff. There's always going to be anti-Semitism. Sally, in our show notes, you specifically brought up the idea of blood libel, the idea that like Jews eat your babies at Passover, and like that's a thing that is carried forward into the hags. And for the record, we will have a link to that in the show notes if you need a definition for that, because it is pervasive in our society and yet still one of those phrases that most people aren't going to recognize. But when you read what Wizards of the Coast has written about hags, it is astounding what went through.
We talked about this a lot in the Banshee episode. Again, a lot of this feels like it was written by a guy who hates his wife. There's all this anger towards women, and there's no reason for it, especially when it gets weird. Under roleplaying a hag in Volos, Wizard states she might casually comment about how easily a visitor would fit in her cauldron, or make a blunt sexual comment about a guest. Wizard sells this game to 12-year-olds, and they're telling them to make blunt sexual comments about each other. I just don't understand where that idea comes from, and why someone would think that would be a good idea to tell people to roleplay at their table.
The things that are like so obviously bad that they don't warrant talking about sometimes, like don't encourage a table where you just shout sexual advances at your players randomly. Of course, what dipshit is doing that?
Well, that's the problem. A lot of tables are doing that, and you should not encourage it in any way whatsoever. Some major streams are doing that, and you should not encourage it anyway.
They eat babies. Which, for the record, in the book, the way hags in general reproduce is they eat a baby, and then they give birth to a new baby. There's a conservation of babies. The science holds up.
Circle of life.
See a baby, eat a baby, make a baby. Net zero babies.
As God intended.
When they eat the baby, is it like unhinge their jaw, swallow the baby whole thing? Or is it like they consume a baby and then make a new baby?
So this is a very fair question to ask, but also one that ideally will never come up. Because would it be a horrifying scene to realize that it's actually like, no, I don't eat a baby. I put a baby in me, and then my body turns that baby into a hag, and I regurgitate the same baby later, versus like, I eat the baby, and that gives me the parts to make my own baby. Very baffling scientifically.
Either way, it's terrible, and also would never get this far, because there has not been a single table that I haven't done a line and veil at which didn't have, you can't
don't
harm children.
Kids.
Right, so yeah. Like this is never going to be role played out at a table.
Right.
It's never going to happen.
I definitely recommend reading reading about hags, specifically in Volos, because I had read the entries for various hags in the Monster Manual, and I was like, oh, they're creepy, and there's like a lot of misogyny. But then when you read the like real kind of deep lore on them, the misogyny is really just sort of the tip of the iceberg. There is a lot of weird anti-Semitic kind of, they're sort of coded as Jewish in a weird way, which, you know, it's not that I think that like the designers of like 5th edition D&D are like hardcore anti-Semites, but this is like the problem of importing your own like cultural understandings of things and making a game out of it. It's like you're just like, you know, a lot of our fairy tales, anti-Semitism is really old.
I'm not gonna say like Gygax hated Jewish people or anything like that. I'm talking about like back of his head type stuff though. What's a golem? Is it a positive, negative thing? Or is it a monster? Is it just a wizard's guardian? Or is it a thing that protects a community and that was created by a priest? What's a phylactery? Is it the evil thing a wizard uses to contain its soul? Or is it actually like a significant religious artifact that you use in certain types of prayers? There's a whole lot of anti-Semitism built into D&D's monsters that people just don't know about because people don't know about Judaism.
There's just a lot of anti-Semitism built into what we believe in the same way that there's like white supremacy and misogyny built into what we believe. Anti-Semitism has been around for like thousands and thousands of years. And so, you know, we have stories, we have fairy tales where like duplicitous people who eat babies, those are based on like really old anti-Semitic tropes. A lot of the people who designed these games are white dudes who are now in their like 40s, 50s or 60s. They've based their monsters on the monsters they've like heard about and grown up with. And so they reflect all of this really problematic stuff, which it's so evocatively misogynist. It's so like rich and descriptive.
And this is the thing. Volos, like with the monster manual, with the DMG, with the play, you could make an excuse of you know, sorts that they were just copying and pasting a lot of this text. A lot of this is just being carried on. Maybe there wasn't a lot of thought. Volos is a new book. They purposely selected these stories and put them together a couple of years ago.
Fuck, you're so right.
So we got sexism, we've got anti-Semitism, and to wrap it all up, we've got ageism.
The heading of one of the sections in Volos is ugly, unpredictable, and old. Which doesn't sound like the description of a monster. Like, if I were describing something as ugly, unpredictable, and old, one, you would assume I'm talking about a person, and two, you would assume I'm an asshole.
Yeah, I was going to say, I would assume you were an incel.
The most frustrating thing for me with all of this is that Wizards has buried a really good lead. In the Monster Manual, under the headline Obsession with Tragedy, green hags revel in the failings and tragedies of other creatures. They derive joy from bringing people low and seeing hope turn into despair, not just for individuals, but for whole nations. They will literally drive a kingdom to despair and ruin out of spite. That is a much more interesting motive for a villain.
Sally, are hags monsters?
I mean, hags definitely feel like they're closer to banshee than they are to something, you know, more monstrous and non-humanoid. Are they a monster? For all intents and purposes, yes. Asterisk. When I'm playing or running games, I prefer humanoid everything. Character. I prefer humanoid NPCs, PCs, BBEGs, everything, because for me personally, and no judgment to anyone who plays differently, I find stories more compelling when they're not a zillion miles removed from like some kind of a reality.
Even if they're behaving exactly the same, the strange old woman who lives in the woods holds an arcane artifact and demands that you do tasks for it feels a whole lot different than you go talk to the dragon who has something in his hoard and demands you do the exact same task or he won't give it to you.
Hags are just so incredibly old that they can sort of pick and choose when they want to, like, you know, rip out your spine and jump rope with it, because they can do the thing that you just talked about, Dylan, which is like, be like, no gift this time. Okay, I'll let it slide and like treat with you. Or they can bat you around. Not the green hag, but some of the other hags in the Monster's Manual have some incredibly like awful, terrifying actions they can take.
I'm going to continue bringing this up in essentially every episode, but one of my favorite distinctions in monsters is the ones where zero hit points is the end of the fight and the ones where it isn't. And like, I love the fact that like for a hag, it depends. A werewolf, which we have talked about, if they are fully like, you know, full moon feral and they drop of character, why wouldn't they rip their throat out? Versus like a hag who is probably just fighting because you've inconvenienced me and now I need to stop you swinging your silly little stick at me.
Right, exactly.
Drops you and then just goes, fucking idiot.
There's no way a hag fights first. A hag would much rather talk, entertain, haggle. They are deal makers. They are always looking to, like, they've been around, again, for 10,000 years, and they have learned conflict avoidance and conflict deflection. Like, they know how to take a bad situation and spin it to their advantage, or just anything that comes across their path that maybe could work out for them. Like, that is a completely understandable skill to have developed. And I think it's fun when you play them that way. Because if you're around a hag and you're never sure, any words you say and they agree back, any handshake you make, any, do you drink? Like if you're never sure about any decision you're making, it puts the players in a really fun place where lots of story can happen just for you being in the room with them.
Why is it that every devil they write isn't a good devil, but then they'll write a random other monster and it's a fantastic devil?
Hags are great devils.
Hags are fantastic devils. Rakshasa are amazing devils. When you read a D&D book and they reference devils conceptually, they're buying and selling souls and they're merchants and they're making deals with humanity. But I have never seen that in a stat block. The beautiful thing about hags is when they're talking about this, is like, hags do need things. They're still doing stuff in the world that require material goods, and an adventure wanders by, they'll make a deal with you. They can profit from this.
Even if they don't have a material need for something, they would be delighted to, like, manipulate you out of that material thing anyway, just because it's fun. It's fun for them.
Can you imagine, like, if a king shows up with a demand, 35-year-old human king goes rolling in, I'm in control of this entire continent. How would you possibly take them seriously? How could you not fuck with them?
If for no other reason, then you're incredibly bored. You're like the mimic who's, like, playing solitaire, waiting for an adventurer to come by, you know, so you can turn into something.
It's not that I like seeing you fall down. It's that I think you're ignorant. I think you don't know the risks of what you're doing. I don't like seeing you fail. I like seeing the moment where you realize that the world is bigger than you think it is, and you didn't consider it sufficiently before you acted.
If there's any gift a hag could give, it would be to take individuals and make them think bigger. And whatever you got to get them there, whether it's pain or lying or tragedy, if you get an individual, a very small thing, something, again, a 35-year-old thing, to an ant, and you can make it think bigger, what possible bigger gift could you give to the world? They exist to teach lessons. These lessons are frequently harsh. If you survive, the idea is you'll learn next time.
They're definitely like a character building type of encounter.
Which leads us very nicely into the last of our sort of like core concepts here, is how do we start making the hags something more usable, and ideally in this particular case, more palatable.
Someone asked a question on Twitter of Jeremy Crawford about hags' gender, and he replied that, like, hags are genderless. That is the, like, today answer that you give on social media, but it is not reflected in the book, where all of the art is, like, someone who we would consider normatively female. All of the pronouns used are she, her.
Don't tell me the hags aren't all women if all of them are aunts and grandmothers.
It's one of those things that's like, it's an inconsistency in the lore, but it's consistency with, like, the misogyny in the writing. I think that, like, the hag is a really, really fun villain because of all of the things we've talked about, all of the fun and interesting role play, all of the kind of playing with players' expectations. I think they're really fun for DMs to role play. I think they're fun for, like, designers to write encounters for. Hags can either be, like, genderless, or they can be, like, coded as men, or they can be coded as women. Like, the point is that, like, if we're deciding that, like, all of their characteristics don't have to be based on, like, gender expectations, then, like, gender them however it makes sense for your table.
Hags are brutes. Like, a green hag is not really a spellcaster. They've got a fistful of cantrips, but mostly their thing is they have a combination invisibility, pass without trace, at will, just as a simple action. It's not a greater invisibility. They still turn visible when they attack or cast a spell, but at the same time, they turn invisible and also don't leave tracks, which means that if a hag is sick of a fight, entirely in keeping with the rest of this discussion, a hag can just take her ball and go home.
Right,
just leave. Be done with this shit.
And you'll never find her.
despite the fact that their casting is limited to like an illusory appearance, they can make themselves look like other people, they can turn invisible. They have an 18 strength and a 16 constitution and a 2d8 claw attack.
It's brutal.
The max output for a single swing, just like literally a backhand, is 20 points of slashing damage.
She could take out like a rogue, a wizard. She could take him out left and right with one hit.
Anything shy of a second level fighter, there's a decent chance that a hag is just going to look at you, swing her arm, and then your throat gushes blood and you fall on the ground and she cackles.
The cantrips that the hag has, Dancing Lights, Minor Illusion, and Vicious Mockery, these are all like play with you for my fun and entertainment cantrips. Taunting, like Vicious Mockery is what, like a 1d4 psychic damage, which is like, it's like a harsh insult, essentially.
She casts Vicious Mockery in conversation because it feels inconsequential.
Maybe that like lures you into a sense of like, oh, well, I guess this isn't a powerful spellcaster after all. But like you said, she has a backhand that can like disconnect your head from your neck.
My name is Aram. My pronouns are he, him.
Isn't this the mid-roll?
Welcome to kill...
Aram.
Every...
Why are we...
Donation.
No.
Murder every dollar.
Why are we introducing ourselves? We're mid-episode.
Destroy all generosity.
That's the exact opposite of what we're trying to do here. Asking for support is weird. But we have some big ideas for where we want to go with Kill Every Monster, and we need your help to get them going.
For $5 a month, you'll get early access to ad-free episodes of Kill Every Monster and Dylan's handwritten DM's notes.
At $10 a month, we've got a character sheet for the fallen paladin, Nathaniel Territon, my complete DM's notes, and a print-ready map of our swampside road for use at your table.
At the $50 a month level, you will join us for a live monthly Monster Mash where creatures face off in an online arena of intrigue and death at the behest of a pair of mysterious wizards.
It's not a mystery, it's us. Still not convinced? Check out a free preview of our Lorekeeper notes for the Banshee encounter at patreon.com/killeverymonster.
And we'll see you next time.
Aram, don't do this.
For murder every benefactor.
I've stumbled across a swamp, a lovely swamp, misty, full of croaking toads and murky water and very, very thick vegetation.
It's a living space.
It's a living space, and frankly, I think that it could be damper. I think it could be more humid. I think that the trees could ooze a viscous, otherworldly goo. I think the frogs could croak in a shrill, strange way.
This place reminds you of somewhere you remember from the Feywild.
Yes, and I want to, some might call it corrupt it, I want to correct it. So that takes most of my time, but I do like to set aside some time every day to just kind of mess with any humans or humanoids that wander into my area. That keeps me entertained because making this swamp a better place to be, sometimes I just need a break. It's hard work. I've raised giant spiders in captivity, and I'm hoping that over the course of like thousands of years, they will evolve to just naturally occur in the swamp. Like, I want this to be their natural habitat.
Sally, what are the pronouns on this hag?
Really, what needs to happen is not just a change of pronouns, a change of like the entire lore, but we can't do that in this encounter. So just for starters, let's go with they, them.
So Aram, why are you seeking out the hag?
I was... In my heart, I suppose, part of me still am, but I was a paladin of Lathander. And I was a good paladin of Lathander. I made Lathander proud. I made the priest proud. And I was proud. But I became a little too proud and strayed from Lathander's light. And I was bitter because things have been handed to me pretty easily. I've always been very athletic. I've always been very connected. My dad made some good money. And so for the first time in my life, something got taken from me. Something I felt like I earned, like God had given this to me. This was my destiny. And then it got taken back. And I could have learned from that experience, but I didn't. I grew very bitter and very angry. And I am in these swamps because I found, I regained a bit of that power. I got it from reaching out to forces I don't quite understand, but it comes at a cost. And I am so tired of paying costs for power I think I deserve. I am here in these woods to right a great injustice. I am here in these woods to find a destiny that is owed to me and reclaim it. I am here in these woods to get back every single ounce of power I once held, all the glory, all the fame, all the honor, and to owe nothing for it.
Sally, there's a light chittering in the woods. You recognize it. It's one of the spiders. It's Michael. Michael comes skittering over, and they look at you. There's like a cocking of the head in the way that like a dog does when they're confused. Raises up two of the front legs and makes some gestures. And I'm going to use heavy, heavy air quotes on this term. Shoulder. It gestures over its shoulder.
Okay.
This language is not particularly complex, and you understand it as best anyone can. A visitor is coming.
Also, how is a spider going to describe a person? I mean, they all got to look, like, roughly the same. Like, he's got two legs, it's walking around, I don't know.
Michael is not the sharpest spider in the web.
Michael, you poor sweet thing. You don't have a thought behind those eyes, do you?
I give him a watch shift so that he, you know, doesn't feel left out, but Huey and Dewey are definitely a little bit more on the ball.
Do you make any sort of preparations for a visitor, or is this very much like, this is your territory, let him come?
You're not gonna open a door in this swamp without a bucket of cold water falling on you when you walk through the doorway. I am going to cast Minor Illusion. Create a rock, a big rock, no more than 5 feet across, because that's the limits of my minor illusion. And I'm going to also use my illusory appearance to look like a handsome, muscular bro. Blonde hair pulled back into a ponytail. And I'm wearing an outfit where I don't look like I'm equipped for like a day hiking through the swamp. I look like maybe I look like a noble. I look like a noble who is out of their element, and I am going to place one of my legs under this rock and pretend that I am pinned under this rock, just waiting for someone to come along and rescue me.
Ram, coming into the clearing, well, I guess the first thing you have to do is I need you to make a perception check.
I can do that. That would be a 14.
Your illusory appearance is like a DC 20. So what you see when you walk in here is a level 6 bro. Laying in the swamp, there's a rock pinning their leg.
I imagine I'm very tense because I know what to expect.
You've heard rumors of the witch in the woods and the various things going on.
The swamp in general is dangerous. So I'm like a little bit on guard. So as I walk out and see this, I'm like squinting to like, am I really seeing what I'm seeing? And then when I realize that I am, I would quickly put my sword away and walk over. Excuse me, sir, sir.
Friend, thank God, please. There's a witch in these parts I'm trapped and I'm fearful. Would you please help me with this rock? I'll do anything.
There is a witch in these parts. That's good thing you came across me first.
Rom is relatively skeptical at this moment, so I'm going to call for, like, the standard, like, you went with the lie, I gotta make you do the deception check.
That is a 16 plus 4 for a non-natural 20.
I rolled a 4. I rolled a total of 4.
So this noble was walking through the swamp in search of a witch and got pinned by a falling rock.
Absolutely. And I am so, like, I think part of this is that you've made a very hot dude here, right? That's what I've, yeah. So my guy's a little distracted. My guy's a little flustered. And I think that is leading into him just accepting whatever he's being told right now. And he gets like a, he finds a stick he can put underneath the rock, puts another rock underneath that. This is the extent of this guy's brain power. He's able to make like one lever. And he's just going to try and pry this rock off of this very handsome young man.
Sally, I'm immediately going to point out that when he puts that sort of like lever and fulcrum together, like, this is a minor illusion.
Right. We're done.
The moment he makes a gesture, he's going to notice this is wrong.
So what I want to do when he gets close enough to make contact is cast Vicious Mockery. When I have another chance, I will change my appearance to something else, but I'm going to keep my like bro appearance when I cast Vicious Mockery.
And that's a wisdom save, right?
Yeah, wisdom saving throw.
Oh, I am rolling ass. I rolled a 3 plus 5 is 8.
So you're going to take a D4 psychic, and you're going to have disadvantage on the next attack roll you make.
Big money, no whammies. Oh, it's 4.
What do you say to me? Like, what do you go for?
I can't believe you fell for that. Oldest trick in the book. My friend, you must be more careful. There's a witch about. You must scrutinize more carefully.
I am incredibly careful, good sir. I have come to these woods with quite care. I have spent my entire life. You don't even know me. How dare you say such a thing? How did you get pinned under, and then like the rock is gone, and I'm just confused and flustered because I didn't notice when it vanished?
Can I take another action to change my appearance, to do illusory appearance?
I look down at the rock. And when I look back up, you've become someone else, right?
Yeah. And also, we're dealing with a two-player situation. And quite frankly, to this point, like, you've had the drop on him. Unless you basically reveal yourself to be the monster and Aram has time to respond, realistically, this is initiative. And it's just a question of whether Aram is taking turns or thinks nothing of what is happening.
I look like a jolly, slightly like red nose, like I've been drinking, middle-aged man who is just dressed like someone from the nearby town. And I want to look disheveled. I want to, you know, basically the idea is I look like a barfly.
The drunk wandered into the swamp.
Exactly. I'm just goofing on you.
Sword drawn, backs up a few feet. What magic is this?
Now. It's just a little magic trick I learned from someone in town. Have you been in town? We love to joke around. And I'm going to take a sip of my water skin, and I'm gonna hiccup in a very, like the way a Looney Tunes character hiccups when they're drunk. Yeah.
Because I don't judge many people's threats due to arrogance. I will resheathe my sword, but I will not take my eyes off of you. I am not from these parts.
Well, I can tell. I mean, you were not very careful. I don't know if you know this, but there is a witch in these parts. I was not joking about that.
I seek this witch. Do you know of her?
Well, I've heard a thing or two. Why do you seek the witch?
I had a destiny that was stolen from me. If anyone knows how to fix that, it'll be a hag.
Well, you seem quite sure of yourself, my dear fellow. I'll give you that.
Thank you.
I am acquainted with this hag, so I suppose I could help if you tell me, you know, what it is that you most desire and, you know, what it is that you have to trade. Obviously, you know, as you know.
Yes, I have booze. Pull like a flask out or something and just toss it at you.
So you deserve something from the universe, it sounds like.
I have a place in this universe. And I wish to reclaim it.
Okay, well, the wine was a good start. It's not really going to be enough beyond that. So what else do you have and what else can you get?
You seem to know much of this witch. I do appreciate your counsel. I have money.
Just because I know this is something that this hag will ask you, I'll ask you just to prepare you. What is precious to you?
Precious is a weakness, really. It's the thing that you need to protect. See, I'm here so that you can be precious. You can enjoy your precious things. That is a joy in your life that I'm allowing you to have by standing guard against all the things that would take that away. So when I think of what's precious, I think of it as a gift. A gift from me.
You're quite powerful, it sounds like.
Thank you, yes.
Well, you know, this hag, they do like to parlay with people who think of themselves as powerful.
Mm.
They won't meet and speak with anyone until anyone who requests an audience has done some trials.
I need me to prove myself.
Exactly.
That's understandable. I'm new in these lands. I will allow this.
Nothing too difficult. I think someone of your physicality and skill, I don't think you should have too much of a problem with it.
You have a keen eye.
So I'm going to point to a tree.
Ah, a tree.
And I'm going to tell this dude that he has to, like, run through the swampy, muddy water, keep his balance, and, like, jump over a succession of tree trunks. And then when he goes to do it, I'm going to use minor illusion to, like, change where the tree trunks are so that as he's jumping, he loses his orientation and hopefully falls and gets muddy.
You're going to need to make an athletics check. And Sally, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but this sounds like you're just trying to impose disadvantage on that athletics check with minor illusion.
Yeah, totally.
That sounds real good to me.
My hope is not just that, like, he'll trip and stumble, but that he'll, like, face plant into the swamp mud.
Aram, we're going to do the DC at, let's say, 15. Let's make this hard, because you're in, like, difficult terrain and everything.
Plus, I am wearing chainmail.
Yeah.
You know what? He'd take a minute to strip off his chainmail if he's going to do this physical activity. He will take a minute to strip off his chainmail.
The more difficult the challenge, the more likely the hag is to respect your effort. So, take off the chainmail.
As I'm going to untie the leather straps, he would stop and nod. Yes, you are quite wise indeed. I will keep them on. It's not like it's a challenge to me after all. And I would line up to run on these stumps.
DC 15, you got disadvantage from the minor illusion and the fact that the position of the stumps is shifting.
All right, so I'm rolling athletics, right?
Yes.
I'm going barreling in because I have confidence. And I did indeed roll a 12 plus 6 is 18.
Oh, look at this fancy boy.
Well, well, well.
You go in and, like, they're shifting in position. They look like they're in the wrong spot until the illusion drops.
There it is.
But you're still in a position where you, like, get into the air, and then you just plant your foot on the actual stump and use that as sort of a jumping off point to kind of propel yourself forward. And you get across this little stretch of swamp, like, incredibly quickly. It's honestly relatively impressive, Sally.
Parkour.
Well done, friend.
Thank you.
There's nothing like seeing someone succeed at such a feat of athleticism. I'm quite impressed, and I believe the hag will be too.
You are quite sharp. Good a judge of character, you.
Shucks. The next challenge is a little different. The first challenge was about your physicality. This one is, it may seem at first blush like it is similarly challenging your physicality, but actually, it is a challenge for the mental stamina, because only those with the mental fortitude to deal with suffering will be allowed to talk to the hag.
Ah.
For this challenge, and I'm going to point to, like, a part of the swamp that has, like, a foot of water, like, not just mud, but, like, actual water. You and I will engage in a contest of wills to see, once submerged, which one of us can hold their breath longer.
Well, if your lugs were in any shapes, this might be a contest.
And so the green hag is amphibious and can breathe under
right.
air and water.
Of course she can.
I'm hoping, I'm going to see what happens when we're underwater. I don't know if, like, I'm just going to let him tire himself out and come up coughing, or if I'm going to play a dirty trick under there.
What am I rolling for this, Dylan?
So, I mean, strictly speaking, I think it's a con save.
Right. I mean, it's an inevitable lose because so, she's
yeah,
going
to... that's the thing. You can hold your breath for a number of minutes equal to your constitution modifier, at which point you have, like, 30 seconds left, and then you drop to 0 hit points.
Right.
So really, it's just a question of how long into this do you get, and do you allow yourself to die?
Which he wouldn't. So I imagine that he would allow himself to get to the end of this total and then explode out of the water sputtering.
To give this some consequence, let's call this a constitution save. You're going to hold your breath for what, like 3 minutes?
Long as I can.
And at that point, you are going to push yourself to the edge of unconsciousness.
Yes.
I'm going to say the DC is straight up just your con score.
Which is 16.
When he starts to come up, I'm going to try to hold him under, not to cause him to like go unconscious and stop breathing, but just as a show of power. So just for another, if it would take 3 more seconds for him to go unconscious, I'll hold him under for 1.5 more seconds.
Okay, so what we're going to do is first things first, we're just going to have a straight opposed strength roll.
I rolled a natural 20.
I rolled
20 plus 3.
All right, let's see how my hag does. My hag, so now I do have a +4 on strength, so that could be something. I rolled a natural 20.
Fuck yes. Oh, fuck. Awesome.
Holy shit.
So, Aram, you are underwater.
Yeah.
And there's the point where you're like just at the edge. You can feel the burning, the point where it almost feels like your lungs are trying to get out of your body just to get more air. And you go to like pull your head up and you feel the pressure, the resistance, and you push. You get up into straight push-up position, try to use your arms and every ounce of strength you have to push up against what feels like a steel grate on the back of your head. Zally, you can feel his, like, the moment, like, where you're like, oh, he's going for quite a while. Aram, you can make that con check at disadvantage now.
First one is 5 plus 2 is 8, and the second one, oh my god, is 2 plus 3 is 5. So I believe I failed that check.
Would you agree that a reasonable consequence for this is a level of exhaustion?
So I'm at disadvantage on ability checks.
Basically any skill.
Gotcha.
You go to stand up and you have to get into full push-up position. And Sally, this becomes basically just entertaining where you can feel like, oh, this one's strong. He's trying.
It's cute.
And then the hand comes away. Ram, it has reached just the point where you've inhaled water. You pull up, you can feel the edge of the water get to like the edge of your face, and then you just get pushed back down. So you have that moment of confidence, and then you breathe in and you're raw.
I would like to use invisible passage and turn myself invisible.
The preceding coughing fit is absolutely long enough for you to pull that one.
Great.
So by the time I've recovered, I'm just alone in the water, in the swamp.
I'd like to repeat what he said about being here to like protect people and so people can have their gifts and that he's owed something from the universe. I'd like to just invisibly do that.
Precious has a weakness, really. It's the thing that you need to protect so that you can be precious.
At this point, even he realizes something else is going on here. So he pulls his sword and he's like wet and like wiping mud out of his eyes. And he's kind of circling around, looking for the person he was just speaking to, trying to find them.
Is this person worth your time?
Show yourself, witch. You owe me.
So he may not be worth the trouble of getting into a long, drawn-out combat or risking my life, but I think he's worth seeing if I can just quickly and easily cause him some major harm, because he's pretty full of himself, and that's annoying to me.
He's not worth killing, but he's 100% worth hurting.
That's better. That's more humiliating. He has to show his face in town again. I think I'm just going to make a claw attack.
You're invisible, so you have advantage.
15 plus 6 is a 21.
Yeah, that's gonna hit. Even with my armor.
2 8s. These fucking rolls,
damn.
Dude. I've never rolled like this in an actual game. So that's 16 plus 4 is 20 slashing damage.
Damn.
I want to leave some marks on this guy because I get the impression that he's like full of himself and his beauty. Would it be like a line or veil crossed if I slashed at his face?
Not at all. He values his face. That's a good thing to hit. Raking up from the neck and across the face, absolutely.
That's it. That's the move.
Tears down across from temple to the opposite side of your jaw. Just this heavy rip, and you take 20 points of slashing damage.
Which is a tremendous amount of damage.
That's like two dead people.
It's true.
As you rip through my flesh, where there should be blood and there should be sinew, there is. But there's also fire. And fire erupts, power erupts, a power you didn't think I had explodes out from me. And I need you to make a saving throw, dexterity 13.
Hell yeah. Okay, cool.
Against hellish rebuke.
Okay, 4 plus 1 for a 5.
Oh, then you take full damage, which is 3 die 10.
Oh, shit. Okay.
15 points of damage as fire explodes from those wounds and just engulfs you.
So you're going to take your first 15 points of fire damage.
Yeah.
Hag doesn't have any resistances, so that's just straight through. So you're going to mark off your spell slot, and then you're going to take your turn, Aram.
All right.
If it's cool with you, strictly speaking, Vicious Mockery lasts until your attack on the next turn. I'm going to roll that forward if it's cool with you.
Absolutely. 100%.
If you choose to make an attack on this turn, of course, because you also have spells.
Once the fire erupts from him and it's just like smoldering inside his wounds, his eyes light red and he slams a hand to his chest and the fire like fills out from his palm and just envelops his body and the wounds heal closed as he pumps 25 points into himself.
Fuck yeah.
Fully healed and standing before you as if nothing happened.
You do not know what you face, witch.
You do know what you face. You face a paladin, apparently. And it wouldn't be the first one.
Bonus action, prepare.
Wrathful smite.
Fire burns in that cut and it melts the skin, where it just falls together like liquid, and when it comes away, it's got like a little bit of redness to it, but it almost looks like you just slapped him. It's like the finger marks. And then the sword just erupts with energy at his side.
I am going to turn invisible.
Yeah,
you're ready to fight. You're at full fucking combat stance. Your weapon is charged with unholy energy and just pure rage. And the thing you would like to cut more than anything in the world is gone.
And so I'm just looking around. Two can play at that game, witch. And he would hold his hand to his chest and darkness would just spill out from him and fill an area all around him.
Oh, shit.
He's engulfed, and then it just spreads out, and you don't see anything, Sally. The world has gone to complete darkness. Mechanically speaking, this brings you down to a standard just straight attack roll. You have advantage for attacking from invisibility and disadvantage from attacking in darkness.
maybe this would be too metagamey and I wouldn't know this, but I'm just wondering how long darkness lasts.
Oh, no. This is... Do you want to make an arcana check?
Yeah. Great. That's perfect. It's an 18 plus 3 is 21.
It lasts for up to 10 minutes or concentration.
If you hit him, it goes away.
I think in that case, I'm just going to try to make another claw attack, knowing that it's maybe a little bit of a shot in the dark.
You can still hear him panting, and like you can't see the glow of that fire anymore because magical darkness, but you've got a feel for where he's at, and he doesn't know where you are, so...
That is a 14 plus a 6, so it's a non-natural 20.
Yeah, that's gonna hit you.
Plus
8,
11 plus 4 is 15 slashing damage.
A little less direct. This is one of those things where it rakes across, like it catches a little bit of skin, and you hear the scratch of iron nails across steel armor. But as it skitters across, it's enough force the way she swings to make you take a step backwards. This isn't a scratch. Rom, it's your turn.
He would turn, and as he lifts his sword, he'll drop the darkness so that he can face off against you and see you for who you are. What is he seeing right now?
You see a gaunt, but also like sinewy with muscle. My skin is like damp somehow. Like all of it. I'm just like damp. Long. No, I'm not going to do long hair. I'm going to save it from the hag trope. Bald. I'm wearing like a cloak, no shirt. I'm barefoot, but I have on like pants that are like rolled up, and I'm all kinds of threadbare. I look menacing, and I think looking into my eyes maybe wouldn't make you as an adventurer and a paladin shudder, but certainly like a commoner making eye contact with me would be like filled with fear.
Oh, I think it does make him shudder. And I think for the first time, like you see a real joy come across his face because now he's facing against a monster. He's the hero. This is where he belongs. And he pulls his sword to his side and just gives you a grin. Thank you for facing me, creature. I shall make this quick. And he comes in to swing at you. 18 plus 7 is 25.
Fuck,
I believe that's going to hit. As he brings this sword in, it crackles with his vengeance. And as he drives it home, it explodes with that hate.
Wrathful Smite. The next time you hit with a melee weapon attack during this spell's duration, your attack deals an extra 1d6 psychic damage. Additionally, if the target is a creature, it must make a wisdom saving throw or be frightened of you until the spell ends.
It's a wisdom save DC 13.
Ooh, not great. Really bad, actually. It's a 4 plus 2 for a 6.
So what would make this witch afraid?
I went into it thinking this was going to be a fun way to spend an afternoon in the swamp, and now I'm actually facing some real... harm, and I think that being surprised in combat is like terrifying to this hag.
They just trigger the fear response in the brain. The spell just short circuits your mind to make you afraid of what is happening. You are now frightened for 1 minute.
Also, every round you can re-roll this, right?
She has to use her action to re-roll it if so desired. Frightened. A frightened creature has disadvantage on ability checks and attack rolls while the source of its fear is within line of sight. The creature can't willingly move closer to the source of its fear. So that's where you're standing, Sally.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm just going to go invisible and just gather myself.
And there's just an exasperated roar from this paladin as he, like, swings around him wildly.
You will give me what I want!
You can't move any closer to him, but there's no obligation to, like, move further away. And your invisibility does not have a time limit.
Just wait me out.
Unless you want to do something, just waiting this effect out is entirely within your realm of options.
Yeah, that's definitely what I'm going to do.
For roughly a full minute, maybe less, because strictly speaking, you have 10 rounds of saves to attempt, you just sort of wander around the swamp watching this thing until it stops being terrifying and starts becoming this fool, standing in the middle of a swamp, in the middle of your domain, hunting you. The most terrifying creature to live in this area in thousands of years, and it is thought that it has the opportunity to extract something that you are not willing to give. And at the point where your body is just filled with that heat and that rage, you realize, oh good, you're back. Aram, do you have any actions or spells you want to, like, put into effect during that wait? Or are you just, like, fucking swinging?
After swinging for a while, like, his anger always seems to rush to the front. But he regains himself, and he remembers who he is. Deep breath, closes his eyes, reaches inside, and then extends a hand, and a dark light seems to emanate from him, and he's just sweeping in circles around him, using divine sense to try and detect this creature. Divine sense. As an action, you can detect good and evil. Until the end of your next turn, you can sense anything affected by the hollow spell, or know the location of any celestial, fiend, or undead within 60 feet that is not behind total cover. You can use this feature 3 times per long rest.
But I'm fey, though.
Then he washes over the area you're in with this ability, and for a moment, like, he seems, again, supremely confident, but that confidence seems to wane as he doesn't pick up a damn thing.
Sally, you're invisible, and he does not know where you are.
You know, the tactical thing would be to attack again, but I think, like, this hag is, like, too excited to, like, try to humiliate him, so I'm gonna appear in his... I'm gonna look like him. And I'm gonna use my mimicry to sound like him, and I'm gonna just repeat what he said. Thank you for facing me, creature, or something like that. But I'm gonna do that thing where you're like,
thank you for facing me, creature.
Thank you for facing me, creature. Oh.
Yeah.
You twist my words, then hear them plain.
Kneel.
And he casts command. Wisdom save DC 13.
That is a 9 plus 2 is 11.
It succeeds. So
the green hag takes a knee.
Now my guy kind of saunters up. This is more like it. It only lasts 1 round. So by the time I've walked up, the magic has already faded.
But I'm like effectively like prone.
Yeah.
And just laugh like it's the funniest. And I'm just gonna say, your magic tricks.
He's got the sword out now. He's got extended towards you.
Yes, of course. And what is it you would like me to do?
Sheathes his sword and then kneels down to look you straight in the eye. I want the power to be mine.
The power, you say? And what power is this?
He would speak of the power of Lathander. This darkness that is in him, this hellish rebuke, this inky blackness that he... It's all an opposite to what he had. What he had was light. He brought joy to farmers. Children loved him. And he wants to be loved again because that's the person he deserves to be. He wants that respect that he has lost back because he's owed it. It shouldn't have been taken from him.
There is one thing you can do, and I could perhaps help you find what you seek.
I will do it.
I would send you deeper into the swamp, defeat the bog serpent that resides in that part of the swamp, and bring me back the bog serpent's scales. If you do that and you bring it back, will be quite valuable to me, and I can lead you where you need to go.
A deal has been made. Thank you for joining Kill Every Monster and our good friend Sally Tamarkin as we learned more about the hag.
Want to see our Lorekeeper notes for the hag encounter? Check out all of our subscriber rewards at patreon.com/killeverymonster.
If you want to suggest creatures for future episodes or talk about the monsters we've discussed on the show, head on over to our Discord. You can find links on killeverymonster.com.
And we'll see you next time
for Kill Every Monster.